The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning. Tune is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course the DraftKings Network's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Midland live from Bar Canada at the D. Beautiful, majestic, glorious downtown Las Vegas, Nevada.
That's right. Let's go. Director Matt Hicks got me fired up. He just counted us in with such energy and pizzazz.
With a gusto?
With a gusto. I'm ready to go for today, man. Let's go. Right.
Thank you, man. I don't get that in my ear, though. Man, I don't get that gusto.
No, you don't. No. All right.
my
just for me.
Drew Dinsick on the show today to talk both NFL and tennis as well. Australian Open at the business end of the tournament. Tennis's first Grand Slam, the back half of the quarterfinals tonight after Chalk McChalkerson got through last night, both on the men's and ladies' side. Djokovic and Sinner. Sinner has not dropped a set yet. Goff and Sabalenka. Sabalenka has not dropped a set yet on the ladies' side. Today, I will actually have tennis picks that I gave out at VSiN.com/picks. I'll give out momentarily. I put them out yesterday, though, so not really quite available at the lines that I had at VSiN.com/picks, but we'll talk about those momentarily because this is the wacky side of the women's draw. So I have three picks coming up tonight. We'll get into that. Eric Eager from Sumer Sports to talk NFL Championship Sunday, as well as Drew. We'll also talk some college basketball with Jim Root, James Patrick Root, on the show today as well. And Sia Najad, ladies and gentlemen. Little PGA slash NFL talk as well. And here's the thing. I just want to warn everybody in advance. I know you were told there would not be any math on the show today. There might be some math. There might be some math on the show. It was inspired by a tweet we got yesterday, which I believe we read on the show about how a gentleman, and I'll get his exact name when we go through the tweet, but he was saying how this show has ruined he loves all the things he's learned. It's ruined him, though, in terms of him trying to explain to, like, casual fans, like he said, 50-plus-year-olds, why you go for two after you're down 14 and you score a touchdown. So it occurred to me, and then Fezzik and I got into a little exchange about it last night. We're on a group text thread. Me, Fez, Todd Wishnev, Will Hill, Chris Felica. Much to the dismay of Todd, Will, and Chris, Fezzik and I are going back. We're like, they're long asleep already, right? Fezzik and I are going back and forth about how the proper way is to explain to the person who still doesn't buy into that you go for two if you score down 14, how the proper way to explain. So what we're going to do later on the show is I'm going to try to explain it to you.
Nice. Okay.
Here's my premise. I think it's the best way to explain it to someone. I think at least 75% of the audience will be like, I can't get this.
Okay, now I'm interested to hear because okay. I feel like I've heard the Steve Fezzik explanation.
Oh, you have?
Multiple times, and he does it as well as anybody I've heard.
Okay, well, I will do the explanation later on.
Challenge. He's done it as well as anyone I've heard.
Yes, I will explain it as well. The problem is on the radio without like paper and pencil and chalkboard, it's tough. I know, it involves a chalkboard. Okay, first, before we get to the tennis plays, NBA last night, what was that?
Woo, it got drunk.
70 points from Joel Embiid in the Sixers, 133-123 win over the Spurs. Shout out to the Spurs who kept this close enough.
Yep.
That allowed Embiid to continue playing. Because there was a moment in this game where you're like, it's going to be too big of a blowout, and he's not coming back. But they kept it close enough. Wembanyama had a big game also. But Joel Embiid drops 70. Sixers don't cover. They were 13.5-point favorites. They do win by 10. Embiid sets the Sixers franchise mark for points in a game. Wilt topped out at 68. When he was with the Sixers, he had six. Wilt had six games in his career where he scored 70 or more. Obviously, the 100-point game in 1962 being the most famous of that. But never won with the Sixers. So Joel Embiid sets the franchise record. Now, Karl Anthony Towns, on the other side of the country, Karl Anthony Towns dropped 62 for the T-Wolves. Not only did the T-Wolves not cover, the T-Wolves lost outright.
Yeah.
As a favorite. And Karl Anthony Towns, now here's the thing, most points in the first half since 1997. Towns had 44 in the first half.
And it was wild, Gil, because as that Sixers game was finishing up, this first half was finishing up.
Yes.
So you're like, Embiid just dropped 70, and there's a chance he gets caught.
There's a chance. The difference in these games is not only that the Sixers won and the T-Wolves lost, and the Sixers you know, get to have that, and the T-Wolves don't get that feeling. But Timberwolves head coach Chris Finch did not like this.
Oh, would you like to hear from Chris Finch?
Do we have that audio?
Yeah, we do have Mr. Chris Finch.
Here is Timberwolves coach Chris Finch on Cats Night.
It was an absolute disgusting performance of defense and immature basketball all the way through the game. So it really didn't slip away. It had been there from the jump. So this is what happens when you have this type of approach.
Yeah, I guess I don't need to read it. I mean, he goes on. But we've all played pickup basketball, whatever level, where there's that dude who just wants the ball at all times. And this was sort of the NBA version where they just threw out all basketball where, like, what's the best play on any given possession? It wasn't. It was just like, just feed Cat. See how many points he can score. And all the other guys, like, they got they had minuscule number of attempts by comparison to what Cat had. So, and by the way, we'll get the exact number on that for you here.
What's funny is I actually thought that was worse in the Sixers game, and they were able to escape with the W. I mean, they were feeding that to Embiid every time down. And then at one point, the Spurs cut it to single digits, and you're like, all right, guys, like, you got to start running a real offense here, or you're going to get caught. This one in Hornets, Timberwolves, the fourth quarter, the Timberwolves just fell apart. I mean, they couldn't do anything. They scored, what, 18 points? Yeah.
Karl-Anthony Towns, 35 shot attempts. Next most attempts by a Timberwolf player, 11 from Anthony Edwards. If you go to the Sixers equivalent, Embiid did hoist it up 41 times, but it's also similar. Tyrese Maxey took 15 shots. The difference in the game, obviously, is one team was playing from ahead and the T-Wolves were gacking it. And so that's the ultimate thing there. Now, the last time two players in one night scored 60-plus points in the NBA was the last game of the season. Those folks of a certain age will remember this. The last game of the 1978 NBA season. Now, you have to just imagine what the NBA was like in 1978 when the Washington Bullets won the NBA title later that summer. Sports Illustrated, may it rest in peace, by the way. We should probably talk about that. Jeez. Sports Illustrated ran the Bullets winning the NBA title on page 75. It's a true story. That's how low the NBA was at the time. The last game of the regular season, David Thompson of the Nuggets and George the Iceman Gervin of the Spurs had a duel, different games, to see who would get the ultimate scoring title.
Yeah,
The difference in what Chris Finch of the Timberwolves said last night after Cat's performance is the opposite of Larry Brown. Larry Brown was the Nuggets coach at the time. David Thompson was chasing the Iceman, and he said, shoot as many times as humanly possible, because they weren't playing. So David Thompson ended up with 73 that night. The Iceman, by the way, one thing he could do was finger roll. He had 63. In the end, they tied for the exact same average. Iceman gets it because he scored more total points. I guess he played more games.
Okay.
So Iceman ended up getting the official title. But that was historical last night. Yeah. That's how far back you have to go. What is that? That's 45 years, you know, since that's happened, where two players played, where two players scored 60 points plus in one NBA night.
It was wild. And like you said, Wembanyama was good last night, but it's just, I mean, there's a 120-pound weight difference. Like, it's absurd. And then, like, Cat, the second half was a completely different story. They lose the game. Everything that Chris Finch says is completely accurate. But, like, the first half of this game, he's launching three after three that are just everything's going in.
He loves a three-pointer.
It's said beginning of this year, he's the best shooting big man in the league. He's going to prove it this year.
Really?
Putting it on display.
Dirk Nowitzki is somewhere going, hello?
No, like, currently.
Oh.
Currently.
I thought he meant all time.
I don't think you went that far.
So, wait, real question then, though. Does this so is there an MVP vote here, or is that gone now? Because Embiid is plus 130.
Okay, so Gil,
he's the short shot, still plus money, but still,
we are very short. Where did I write this down? So we are 40 games left for the 76ers. Joel Embiid will have to play 33 of them to qualify for the MVP award. So, do I think the odds? This is where the odds making this market has got to be so tough right now with that, right? With how much time we have left in the season, 40 games for the 76ers, he's got to play 33 to qualify. So, like, the odds are so fascinating to me because what would Embiid be if this rule didn't exist this year, right? He'd probably be minus 130, 140, something like that, at least right now in this market. But you got to move him back a little bit because there's a chance he doesn't qualify for the award.
He is averaging 36.1 points a game.
It's insane.
There have only been seven full NBA seasons where someone averaged more than that. And their names are, you ready? Wilt, MJ Wilt Harden by a fraction.
Wow, well, yeah.
Remember James years. Harden had that 1 year. Was it 2018, 2019? Yeah.
The only way I could look is still at this, on January 23rd is beyond Joel Embiid. I'm just scared about him being able to get all these games in. It is a thin margin now. You tweak one ankle, anything happens.
Yeah, no,
and I'm not
true.
Trying to say the guy's injury prone,
He's got to play 33 of how many?
33 of 40.
Whew, that's tough.
That's tough.
With the other side being, if he does average 36.1, he's getting it.
He's walking. He's cruising to the podium to pick up his award.
Did you ever hear the Adam Sandler joke? He used to kill with this joke. When he was a young comic, he used to come on about Wilt's 100-point night. And he used to go, here is my imitation, you know, Sandler's voice, of the opposing coach the night Wilt scored 100. Who's got Wilt? That's the greatest.
We'll have to ask Drew about this on the other side, because I'll maybe pick up some Jokic along the way here, but yeah. I can't bet Embiid right now.
And experts to work for you and start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Get your first year for only $199. Just use the promo code ANG. Get access to everything on our brand new VSiN.com website. Plus, our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Plus our upcoming Super Bowl betting guide with best bets and favorite prop bets. Remember to use promo code ANG. What is that promo code, Kelly, again?
That's promo code ANG as in A numbers game. And I got breaking news for you on the other side, Kelly.
Oh, wow. Remember to use promo code ANG. Get your first year of VSiN Pro access for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Yes, sir.
The NBA news carries on. The Miami Heat have made a trade.
Oh.
Terry Rozier, welcome to Miami. Hornets get Kyle Lowry in a 2027 first round pick.
Wow.
I do think that will be a significant addition to the Heat backcourt.
So for that guy I got in an argument with years ago, he's like, Kyle Lowry is going to win the Heat a championship. Almost. Got close. Yeah, it wasn't really him who did it. But so they moved on. Interesting.
Yeah.
You think that makes them better?
Yes, I think it makes it better. I think it gets a contract off their books that they didn't necessarily want. And I don't think that Kyle Lowry experiment was ever going to work out in Miami.
Yeah.
Clearly didn't.
The other part of that Sandler joke, by the way, the one about the Wilt ones, he had another part of that, which was, here's my imitation of all of Wilt's teammates the night he scored 100.
Forgot about the second part.
Wilt, I'm open. Ladies and gentlemen, Drew Dinsick joins us. You can follow him at whale_capper. He is the host of Not One But Two podcasts at NBC Sports Bet the Edge. And, of course, Dinsick Classic, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor. Drew joins us now from his abode in the LBC. How you doing, man?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Doing very well. Does your needle move with Lowry leaving the Heat at all and Rozier coming in?
I mean, I think that entrenches the Heat probably in your top four in the East. It's an upgrade. Scary Terry. Heat culture. I mean, we got some synergy there, right? I don't know. <It's> not...
Wow.
I mean,
for a second there, I was like, really? Wow. Scary Terry and the Heat culture. Yeah.
I mean, it comes down to Jimmy Butler being healthy for the playoffs. I think he probably is kind of, you know, he seems to still have it. If he's right, then, they could be a tough out for the Celtics in round two in a 1-4 matchup. I don't think realistically any of the 5 through 8, teams in the East right now are like significant threats to the top four, but, a lot of things can change.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But Drew, I would say, added a guy who can at least, so many times we've looked at the Heat the past couple of years and you're like, can anybody give me 20 points outside
reliably.
Of like two or three guys reliably?
Yeah.
Rozier at least is able to do that from time to time, right?
Yeah, that's a very fair point. I mean, any kind of, even if he ultimately takes on more of like a, a Tyler Hero second banana type of role, that having a guy who can heat it up and create is definitely valuable for the Heat, who have kind of been significantly missing that player. Yeah, I agree with you.
Drew, the first segment we were talking about Joel Embiid tickling the strings to 70 balloons, as one of the coaches at basketball camp used to say to us. Plus 130 for MVP, and Kelly very astutely pointing out he's got to play a minimum of 33 more games to qualify. Ergo, that a bet for you or not?
It's not because of that, and I'm starting to get a little nervous. I'm going to be holding the bag here because I have a lot of Jokic, and Jokic's case is starting to look really pedestrian by comparison. That said, we got a lot of games left, and I don't see I don't see a clear path for the Sixers to get a top two seed in the East. So literally, Embiid is just going to have to lap Jokic in counting stats and be the clear and obvious eye test favorite for everyone, I think, to beat Jokic. So, it's a fascinating market because I do think there is scope for Embiid to miss more time in March and April. He's obviously being conscientious about how often they're playing him for good reason. I think there is a chance that if he makes the threshold, it's barely. And the fact that, a player like Jokic is going to play most of, you're going to play, 74 games, 76 games, something like that. There's going to be an argument that people have about just availability, even if Embiid meets the minimum threshold.
All right. Any NBA plays today by any chance?
Let's see. Speaking of the Nuggets, laid the four with them. Tyrese Haliburton remains out for Indiana. Can color me unimpressed with kind of upgrading their rating just based on the Pascal Siakam trade. Not that I don't think that's good for them long term. I just don't think they're like a meaningfully better team. And I think you have a nice little, a rare opportunity where you have a rest advantage for the road team here. So I'll take the Nuggets, lay in the points. And the New Orleans Pelicans, I think, should be closer to double-digit favorites against this iteration of the Jazz. Not exactly sure what the Jazz are doing to warrant puncher's chance consideration in this game. They look like they're in a little bit of trouble tonight to me.
Badalon, do you have any NBA
plays? Yeah, co-sign on the Nuggets. I'm on the Nuggets. I did look at the Pelicans. Didn't play yet. Might be joining Drew there. I'm on the Knicks side with probably everybody else on the planet tonight. And then I grabbed... I do have my biggest NBA bet of the year, I guess, pre-flop tonight, but it's no longer at a number available. Drew probably noticed this yesterday, but it is Clippers laying 5.5 right when LeBron got ruled out last night.
And it's 9
that
now.
That was a good one.
It's 9 now. All right, let's do one of the championship games here, and then we'll save the second one for the second segment. Let's start with the first, which is the AFC Championship on Sunday, with the Ravens hosting the Chiefs. Two MVP quarterbacks. The marquee matchup of the two, one would say. Have you made up? By the way, let me just preface this because I'm not giving Drew his street cred. He was fantastic wildcard weekend, as we documented here on this show. Then I believe you swept it in the Megapod as well, division round. Ravens favored by 3.5 here with a total at 44.5. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you did your best to try to jinx me, but it didn't work, Gil.
It didn't work.
This is getting increasingly tougher, though, as you would expect. I think there is definitely, if you don't already have Chiefs in pocket from pre, I think if the market is soft at all for the Chiefs, it's for a specific reason, which was there was a day, right before week 18, where the Chiefs were like +450, +500-ish to win the AFC. And it was a bad price because there was, there were a number of things that kind of all kind of came together where there were paths for them to basically just scoop equity like crazy without even really doing anything, just because, the Bills could have lost out, not even gone to the playoffs. The Chiefs could have had, gotten the Steelers in the first round. Right? There were a lot of paths for the Chiefs to gain equity while doing nothing. The worst case scenario is, you had multiple opportunities to get off the Chiefs if you did make that bet. And so I'm staked non-trivially staked into the Chiefs winning the AFC at, I think, plus 450 was the kind of last number I clicked there. So I'm essentially already on Chiefs at a better price than you can get on Moneyline plus 163. So I think, and I think there are plenty of people who also were pretty confident in the Ravens preseason who are sitting, you know, sitting on some nice prices Ravens. And, you know, so if there's any Chiefs, you know, momentum in the market, is it people shooting for a middle? Probably. And I think that's kind of why you're seeing this type of a market, you know, established here. I definitely have talked to people whose numbers I respect who think this should be closer to 4.5, 5. I personally think this should be 3. So I think there could be some two-way action, just people who are, you know, agnostic on who ultimately wins the AFC, who, you know, who are getting down on this one. And there's been a little bit of push-pull. I guess plus 3.5 minus 115 is the best I see right now. And that's the best that there's been for the Chiefs. So as of this moment, we're looking at mostly Ravens action in the market. Ultimately, I think, you know, I've made this joke a couple other times, so if you've already heard it, I apologize, but this has all of the whiffs of no matter what you decide here, I'm going to back the Chiefs, I'm going to back the Ravens. In the fourth quarter of this game, you're going to feel stupid.
Because
it was staring at you. You could have had Pat Mahomes at plus money in an AFC championship game. You know, this is Pat Mahomes as a dog is
Kelly
automatic.
Kelly had to do the walk of shame yesterday for fading Mahomes. We did a whole thing.
Yeah, I yelled at myself. Yeah. I gave myself a pep talk, Drew, for this week, and I'm not doing it again.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's definitely scope where in the fourth quarter, if you back the Ravens here, you're like, man, I had a chance to back Pat Mahomes at the biggest price he's ever been in the playoffs, and I didn't do it. And there's also a scope here where you're like, wow, I backed the Chiefs and missed the fact that the Ravens were a generationally great team when all of the signs were there. The entire fourth quarter of the season, their offense, this was a late-blooming offense, guys. This was an offense that emerged at the right time of year to really give defenses, you know, hell in the playoffs. And even beyond that, I'll say that, like, the Ravens showed you some stuff in the second half of that Texans game that we haven't really seen from them this year. So they obviously have like a whole nother gear that they've been kind of keeping in their back pocket for the high leverage moments. That's scary. So favorite bet on the game, if I had to have one, over 44.5. I think this is not going to be a tightly contested field position, field goal type of game. I think both of these quarterbacks can show out, and I think this should be closer to 47 on the total.
All right, Drew, I'll just need the answer without an explanation because we're going to break. Are the Ravens generationally great, as you say, or is this the most flawed group of four championship teams that you can ever remember?
Oh, closer to most flawed group of championship teams that I can ever remember. Nice. But if you back the Chiefs, you can bet that you're going to feel that the Ravens are great if you're losing.
NFL and tennis on the other side. Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free, I mean free, Visa Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter,
conference championship previews from our own Zach Cohen and Adam Burke. Check it out.
There you go. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox absolutely free. Don't cost you nothing. Visit beeson.com/newsletter to subscribe. Skill Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada, Bar Canada, the barrage here at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Drew Dinsick, kind enough to join us as always for a second segment this morning. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. Deep Dive and Bet the Edge podcast is where he does his thing. Before we get to the San Francisco-Detroit NFC Championship, which is the nightcap of the two championship games this Sunday, let's talk a little Australian Open because we are on the back half of the quarters. As I mentioned earlier, chalky last night in terms of Coco, who had a tough time. That was a strange match against Marta Kostyuk yesterday. Coco gets through. Aryna Sabalenka has not dropped a set. She gets through. That's the chalk side of the women's bracket. On the men's side, Djokovic and Sinner. Sinner has not lost a set. They're through. Men remain chalky tonight in the two matches. All the chalk players, I should say, that were pre-flop remain. On the women's side tonight, the back half of the quarters, it is just sheer mayhem where we are ensured that we will get a first-time, forget semifinalist, we'll get a first-time Grand Slam finalist of this group. Drew, any plays on either side tonight?
Well, I didn't catch all the action last night, but I saw my Marta plus 5.5 was graded a winner, so I assume there was nothing weird about that match at all.
bro, let me just say this. So I actually sent a text to Felika and Will about this. 7-6, 6-7, the first two sets.
Yeah.
People who had Kostyuk plus 5.5 are like, no problem, right? and Coco goes up like 4 love. Did she go 5 love?
Oh, man.
I think 5 love, maybe.
Five love.
She
was serving for the third set bagel.
Yeah, but they broke each other a million times, so it happened just in the nick of time.
So that's the in one match you go from tearing up or winning a ticket and going to tearing it up and then going on to win the thing.
Yes.
Yeah. It was even crazier than that because Marta started off 5-1 in the first set. Like, she realistically should have just coasted to covering the spread. And it came down to an at-the-death break.
One of the strangest matches you'll ever see. Yeah. Like, it was just very bizarre.
It was a bizarre match.
Yeah.
But you know what? I don't understand these markets for the semis, man. I mean, the quarters tonight look correctly priced to me. I think, if anything, Zhang should be a little bit more, heavily favored. Obviously, she's a player that I rate quite highly, so I'm not betting that because I kind of know I'm higher than market on her. I know I'm higher than market on Noskova. So, I agree with those two women being, kind of healthy favorites.
Before you continue, can we throw up mine? Because I put these in at VSiN.com/picks yesterday. These lines are gone, but I took both the dogs at prices that don't exist anymore, by the way. Both of these players are in the 150s now. But I got Yastremska at +179. I got Kalinskaya at +174. I, too, love some Zhang Xinwen. And by the way, for those who are not into tennis betting, a match between Zhang and Kalinskaya, probably a match you should watch, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Incredible
shot making.
That's exactly right. Incredible shot making is exactly what I was going for there.
Let me check out highlights.
And Kalinskaya, her numbers are fantastic. I think Zhang is the more consistent player, but right now, sure, Kalinskaya has never played better, and certainly in the Yastremska-Noskova match. Noskova, who was the one who beat Iga, by the way, RIP Australian Open futures. Yastremska is one of these players who only knows how to play one way. And when it's on, man, is it on. And she knocked out Victoria Vika Azarenka yesterday, the day before, rather. So, like, no small feat there either. So at the prices that were north of +170, I thought those to be excellent value. The only other thing I have tonight is on the men's side, which is the over on the Orkats-Medvedev match.
Yeah, I looked hard at the over for the two women's matches you mentioned, not because I see a ton of value in the dogs the way that you do, but you have first timers, and first timers trying to win a quarter is does that have potential to get a little tight? Absolutely. Usually, what you see last night from Sabalenka, where there's a mismatch like that at the quarterfinal stage, it's usually pretty, pretty definitive. I don't think we have those type of matches really on the card here. So, both games lined around 22. If you wanted to shoot for over 22 in both, if you wanted to shoot for over 2.5 sets in both, I think, you're ultimately looking at some plus EV bets there. But yeah, I'm expecting Zhang Noskova in the semifinal, and I'm expecting Zhang to move on to the final. The Coco Sabalenka one is the one that I'm scratching my head about. Old enough to remember these two women playing at the U.S. Open final, Gil. It was
old enough to remember.
4 months ago.
That's right.
How many was it? It was not that long ago. And I know it was on U.S. soil. I know there was a home crowd bump for Coco in that match. We don't have a lot else to go on in terms of how these two women stack up against each other. But Coco handled the power from Sabalenka perfectly well. And in general, I think she's got the skill set to do this. And Sabalenka has, still a semifinal boogeyman to overcome. If you remember, even on her way to that U.S. Open final, she got bageled in the first set by Madison Keys and managed to win with eke out two tiebreaks to get across the line before losing the final. So, I will believe it when I see it that she is completely mentally healed from all of the insane things that have happened to her at slam semifinal level. And just in general, I think this should be closer to a coin flip matchup. I mean, when, the futures market was basically pricing these women as a pick 'em, a couple of days ago. And I was like, yep, I'm right there. Like, this is, they'll both get to the semifinal and that'll be a coin flip. And I lean Coco in that setting just because of the head to head win last year combined with the boogeyman for Sabalenka. But we're looking at +160 on Coco right now. And I have to guess, I have to go back and take a closer look at that. At that match last night, because I don't recall her picking up an injury or anything like
that. No, there was no injury.
Yeah.
+160 honestly, even at a glance, right? Like, even that's one of those where you just know instinctively, like, even if Coco doesn't win, that's off, right?
That's off. Yeah. This should, like, if you gave me a -120 +120 market, obviously that's no vig. I would say, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, +160 does feel like there's you know, they're looking for the dog money here. Sabalenka is, she's amazing. Like, I don't mean to take away from her game at all. And if she wins this match, is she likely to win the final? Yeah, absolutely. Like, she's -120 to win the title right now. It would be her back-to-back titles for her at the Australian Open. These conditions favor her game. Like, these are all facts, but, you know, there's Sabalenka in the early rounds of slams, and then there's Sabalenka at the semifinals, and they're two different players.
All right.
And the data will tell you that.
Let's do the Niners and the Lions. Niners favored by a touchdown here, with all kinds of questions from Debo to Brock Purdy to Kyle Shanahan. Where do you stand on this game?
Yeah, we talked about it on the Megapod. Best case scenario in my mind heading into this weekend was going to be an ugly Niners eke it out kind of win, which I think actually is doing them a kindness to say that was beating the Packers, because honestly, that was how did the Packers blow this game, or even so than the Niners with a hard fought win. But, you know, close Niners win and a Lions, you know, with a cover was kind of the perfect setup for people to, really kind of lose a little bit of, lose a little bit of track of the relative difference between these two teams. And I'm particularly excited about the matchup with the Niners wide receiving crew and tight end crew against a Lions team that has a very tough time tackling and a very tough time on the second level. And, you know, you saw just an absolute plethora of opportunities for the Buccaneers to get yards after the catch and to get some explosive plays in the passing game. Baker Mayfield, outside of the, you know, taking the just the egregious sacks, was pretty dang good until the final interception, I thought. And, you know, this is a decent spot to buy low on Brock Purdy, and as people have kind of quit him, I think. And you're getting 7 at a pretty cheap price here. So yeah, I'm laying 7 with the Niners. And Debo Samuel, I'm a little split here on how much he matters for this particular contest. Obviously, he's a yak merchant in general, and you'd love to have him out there. But I think this could be a huge game for Brandon Ayuk and Jennings and Kittle and CMC, obviously. So there's a lot to like on the Niners offense side here, going up against the Lions defense that I think has some pretty obvious holes. And then when you flip the script, Lions coming in without Jonah Jackson, with the banged up Frank Ragnow, up against a very, very strong interior pass rush for the Niners, that could spell huge trouble for Goff getting into rhythm in this game. And while there clearly are issues with the Niners defense, I will acknowledge it, they at least have outstanding linebacker play. And if they can generate pressure on Goff, I think that could be the distinguishing factor here. So yeah, I laid it with the Niners, and ultimately think total 51 is probably exactly right.
All right. Expect a lot of Montgomery and Gibbs probably in this game, but Drew has laid the 7. I think I am going to be there as well, waiting to see if this comes down at all with some Debo news. Drew, thank you so much. Appreciate it as always. Good luck with all the tennis bets, man.
Yeah, you guys as well. Best luck.
Drew Dinsick, who will join us on Radio Row coming up right before the Super Bowl. Looking forward to that. We'll come back with Sia Najad. We'll talk golf. We'll get his 2 championship game thoughts. That's on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL playoffs, bringing you an offer that'll help make the playoffs electric. New customers can bet $5 on any game, get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSIN. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code VSIN. The crown is yours. We get tweets at Beating the Book. I haven't read any tweets today. Larry Fresh, math, yes. He's very excited for the math coming up later on the show. I warned you. I know you heard that there wasn't going to be any math, but there will be math. We're going to talk from when you go from 14 down in an NFL game and you score, why you go for 2. This is inspired by a tweet yesterday who said he still can't explain to others. You know, they still don't get it. We'll try to do it with Kelly later. Michael Burns, I think you like the finger roll as much as you like, oh, I love the Wildcat. I love them both. Jay Buckley, my friends have a hip-hop group out of Raleigh with an album titled, you guessed it, David Thompson. harken back to, again, Joel Embiid scoring 70 last night, Cat scoring 62. Last time two players in the NBA on one night scored 60-plus. It was 1978 when David Thompson and George Gervin did it in a scoring title contest the last game of the NBA season. Didn't some group have a song, Mookie Blaylock? Didn't Nirvana have Mookie Blaylock or something also?
Oh, man. I don't know. I'll have to check.
Or Pearl Jam or one of those groups?
Pearl Jam. Thank you, Matt. Yes.
Joe C714. By the way, I didn't get Matt in my ear. Got that on my own. Don't you think, Joe C714, don't you think if Embiid gets close, they just put him in, have them foul, get him out? Do the rules stipulate how many minutes you have to play? It does not have a minute stipulation. That's an interesting strategy right there. Interesting.
There's a certain minutes level. There is. Like, you have play 62, and like, you have to play 20 minutes for 62 games
Like
that.
Okay.
There is more. There is a little more to it than just that.
This is from Jack. Jack14770548. Best friend used to work for Golden State Warriors. Had pleasure to hang with Al Addles a few times. Each time Al asked me the same trivia question, what two players can buy for the most points in an NBA game? Al had 17 the night Wilt had 100. I know his son, Al Addles Jr., very well. Eddie B., sorry if it's already been discussed. When is the Vegas pod coming this year? Right in between the championship games of the Super Bowl. I think it's like our 13th annual or 12th annual, something like that. We'll have to check.
I had to Google this real quick. I just saw that someone brought this up last night. I didn't know what sport it was, but my favorite new sports name, family with the last name Allen, named their kid Iverson. I guess he just got signed by the Pirates or something.
His name is Iverson Allen.
Yeah, Iverson Allen.
Man. Ladies and gentlemen, we are thrilled to have this gentleman back with us. Sia Najat, host and analyst on the Monumental Sports Network, co-host of the First Cut podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Sia Najat. That's S-I-A-N-E-J-A-D. He joins us now. How you doing, man? Santana Moss, one of the all-time very greats, still in the background.
You know who else is in the background is the Magic Johnson jersey. You brought up the Mookie Blaylock song from Pearl Jam. Red Hot Chili Peppers had a song titled Magic Johnson. And by the way, true story, I have a dog. I used to have two. One unfortunately passed away recently. Her name is Olive. But my other dog, Schnauzer Poodle Mix, his name is Iverson. Paying homage to Allen Iverson, one of the best at Georgetown.
See what we did there? We didn't even know we were doing that.
Brought it full circle.
Yeah. By the way, Santana Moss, one of the all-time very goods. I botched that. All right, Sia, let's talk with football before we get to golf. Championship games, I'll let you go wherever you want with either of these two. What is your favorite bet of the weekend?
Well, so I haven't really dove into the prop market yet. I'm definitely going to have some props, but when we're looking at sides, I mean, first of all, I lean to both unders here. We're looking at Niners Lions on the screen. I actually lean to the Lions +7. I just think +7 is too many points for a 49ers team that, in my opinion, is probably going to be without Debo. And to the extent they have Debo, I think we're looking at like 50% Debo as opposed to 100%. So I wonder if he's in this game, how he's going to react to the pounding he usually gets, you know, after catching those short area passes. Ultimately, I've seen enough from the 49ers wilting on offense and defense. I think they're going to win the game. They're my preseason Super Bowl pick. I know I'm a genius. No, I mean, I'm kidding, right? Like, a lot of people had the 49ers. I like them still to win the Super Bowl, but I think 7 is too much. I think the pass rush is going to get after Brock Purdy, and we've seen lately Brock Purdy, his decision-making when the pass rush gets to him, it's not great. I could see him turning the ball over once or twice. That keeps the Lions in the game. I think the Lions will be able to run the ball a little bit. As long as they don't get down early big, they should cover the 7-point number.
Weather looks so far, I get it, we're Tuesday, right? The game's not till Sunday, so we still got 5 days left here. But the weather in Santa Clara looks to be dry. So that obviously a big deal because Brock Purdy seemed to have a lot of trouble. Like, his kryptonite seems to be raindrops. That's for sure.
Yes.
So he's wiping his hand mid-play. What about the other game? Anything there?
Yeah, I like the Ravens quite a bit in this game. I will say this. I mean, it's 3.5, obviously, but this will toggle down to 3 at some point. It'll probably just bounce back and forth between 3.5 and 3. At 3, I love it. So I may as well wait because at 3.5, we see the juice in large part is on the Chiefs here. I just think the Ravens are not only peaking, but they're just the better team at this point. The Chiefs have had the luck. Listen, the Chiefs are good. Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce. I totally get it. The mystique, Andy Reid, all of that stuff. But they've had the benefit, just from a contextual standpoint, of playing two defenses that really had none of their weapons. I mean, Miami's defense was completely down and out with injuries. And then you see the Bills' defense, they did the best they could, but they didn't have much to offer either. Now you're going to see some real resistance against an offense that, let's be honest, over the regular season, has not looked good. This is a Kansas City Chiefs team that's probably going to lean on its defense to win this game. And when you look at what Lamar Jackson did against that Houston front, which I think is actually a pretty good front, I mean, it was just men among boys. And I'm not saying that's how it's going to be against Kansas City, but you got Baltimore at home. The passing game is working. The running game is really working. And the defense is so formidable relative to what Kansas City has faced, particularly over the last 2 weeks. I like it at 3.5, but I'm not taking it at 3.5. I'll wait for it to bounce back down to 3, and I'll take the Ravens.
All right. Never too early to talk golf with you. Please tell me you didn't have Nick Dunlap to win the tournament last week, right? You didn't have that.
Oh, dear Lord, no. Yeah. Not even close.
Okay. Just making sure. Because you never know when with Sia. He'll be like, oh, yeah, I had 10 first-round winners in a row. Farmers Insurance here with Xander Schauffele and Colin Morikawa, closely followed by Patrick Cantlay and Max Homa as your short shots here. What did you end up with?
Well, it's interesting because those are the short shots. That's obviously the cream of the crop. Like, I generally don't like taking, you know, 12-1 or shorter. I think you can get away with it in this field. I think Max Homa, Xander Schauffele are really interesting at those odds. I don't think it's too short, but I decided to go a little bit longer. And we see both Minwoo Lee and Ludvig Åberg here, or Åberg, as it's properly pronounced, at 20-1. I think both of these guys have the requisite upside to pass Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa on a Sunday. Let's be honest about this board. This is a really tough course, and there's only so many that can win this tournament. I think once you get to the 40-50-1 range, that's pretty much where the buck stops in terms of the win equity in this tournament. So the reason I like Minwoo Lee and Ludvig Åberg is because they have so much upside. They're in my opinion, especially Åberg, or again, Åberg, let's just call him Ludvig for now. He's got his course fit is excellent for this course. I think Minwoo Lee to a slightly lesser extent. But when you don't have Scottie Scheffler at the top and when you don't have John Rahm at the top, I'm not extremely intimidated. And I don't think these two young gentlemen are either, with Xander Schauffele, Colin, Patrick Cantlay, and Max Homa. Now, granted, most of those guys have California ties. They should be good. They're all good course fits. But I'm going to go ahead and opt for the longer odds with both of those guys. If I'm thinking like slight long shot, and I say ever so slight long shot, I think Keegan Bradley is a good course fit. He's got great recent history, and he's got great course history. He's not a sexy pick by any means, but at 33-1, in some markets, I think he's 30-1, which I think is fine. Anything shorter than that is not fine. But I think Keegan is worth some attention in the outright market.
I know it's going to shock you, Gil.
You have some Keegan Bradley,
One of the ones that's already in my account, yes.
Kelly loves himself some Keegan Bradley.
Just a reminder before we go any further, Sia, that this is a Wednesday start. Start for this tournament. We go Wednesday through Saturday to avoid AFC and NFC conference championships.
We forget about this every year, don't
I do, at least, yes. Yeah. Long shots coming up after the show today.
There you go. Now, I know you don't like to be known for this, Sia, but you know where we're going. First round leaders, which you have done spectacularly well in this market through the years. What do you have for this tournament?
First of all, credit to the PGA for acknowledging, and this isn't the first year, right? But acknowledging that, you know, the NFC and AFC championship are going to dominate Sunday. So we end this thing on Saturday. And the part of the reason I bring that up is because, you know, I only have 4 first round leaders here. Normally I have 5 or 6, and normally I have like way more matchups to provide, but because the sports books were a little late in getting stuff out for a Wednesday start, you know, I put 4 together in the first round leader market that I do like. I'll probably add maybe 1 or 2, but North Course first round leader, Sepp Straka. We know he can absolutely pop in a first round or really any round, 28-1. Michael Kim has very strong ties to this area and it's reflected in his course history. I like him at 40-1 as your first round leader. And Joseph Bramlett has actually he's got good history here. And if he can get the putter going, I think he can be a first round leader. He's no stranger to being a first round leader. He was at least tied for a first round leader in a ticket that I hit last year. And then on the South Course, I only have one guy. I think Steven Yeager is quietly going to have a pretty good season, and it might start this week, hopefully in the first round. I like him at 35-1.
Yeager's also your one head-to-head play you like as well?
Yeah, day one, I've got a 3-ball. Steven Yeager plus 110 over Ben Martin and Hayden Buckley. It's only 18 holes, so it's a small sampler, but I think he's way better than these two, and his course fit is way better than these two. I'll take him in a round one 3-ball at plus money.
Sia Najat back in D.C. Thank you, Sia. Appreciate it, man. Good to see you.
Thanks, fellas.
Coming up, Dan Lebatard if you're on the DK Network. We're coming back at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. NFL on the other side. A little college basketball break, too. That's next.